street. In fact, now it's connecting to where Arjuna is. Last week we saw Guru Nahatva Hi Mahanubhavan. That's the fifth sloka. So this is a downfall. That is the reason for many, a lot of times people get into a miserable state of mind. And no matter what they do, they just cannot be happy. And because they are functioning from the ego perspective, and you have seen, no matter how much money you have, how much achievement you have, how much success you have, people still are miserable. People are still unhappy, but they just don't know how to come out of that because their focus is something else. They are not focusing on the area which they are not comfortable with. Okay, so we'll go to verse number 5. Oh yeah, I just gone off track. I was just saying Krishna was an avatar, right? So avataram means in Sanskrit means to descend. Okay, avataram, arohanam, avarohanam. There is one word in Sanskrit that means when you ascend up or you climb up the stairs is arohanam, and then when you descend down, you comes avarohanam. But from this, but avatar also has that same meaning, but here it means descend. So it is the divine that comes down. Interestingly, in the Mahabharata also, when Lord Krishna, after finished the battle, when they returned to their palace, Arjuna asked Lord Krishna, can you repeat to me the Gita that the song that you sang to me, the Bhagavad Gita, basically whatever you taught me, can you repeat to me that whatever you told me in the battlefield? And Lord Krishna's answer said, no, I can't repeat to you because that moment I was connected with the universal consciousness, and it was the divine will that functioned at that moment. So in that way you can understand. So Krishna, he says, of course he gave him something else, but he says, I can't repeat that because that was it was an epoch making moment. It was by the will of the universe itself, the universe to deliver the Gita. And Lord Krishna was the avatar, was the medium through which it is expressed. Okay, and he's a very unique avatar. Because he is called the avatar, the Purna avatar, one with 16 colors. He displays all kinds of qualities that Ishvara has. And yet he will be seen pretty much like an ordinary human being throughout most of his life. You know, so that's why people would vivify him and make fun of him and all that. Only very few wise like Bhishma knew that Krishna is not an ordinary person, but for most of people they couldn't see. You know, that's when the full avatar comes. When the full avatar comes, it comes so ordinarily. You know, he's a thief, he's a diplomat, you know, he's a cowherd boy, he's a playboy, he was everything. He was a king. You know, he was all kinds of things. He was a statesman. You know, he's a well-known diplomat also, but you can't tell. Whereas in this today's world, people think that those people who are very deep in knowledge or so deep enlightened, they all comes with big fanfare and all that, a lot of outer shows. But a lot of times this outer show is used to mesmerize people and then, to hit you down. You know, I know when I was in India also, when I was wearing like a sadhu, everybody talked to me in one kind and nobody will question whatever I say. That's awful. The moment I throw away that vesha and put another vesha, so then everybody can question, you know, gee, I don't agree with you. But when you, that same person tell the same thing, if you put that all that, yeah, Guru Maharaj, you see. So the attachment to the outer is so powerful. We don't dare to question anything. And therefore religion has decayed because we don't dare to question religion at all. You know, it has to be about belief and faith. That's why it's such a horrible state, because there's no more reasoning, there's no more logic, there's no more questioning. So when God comes down, he will never come down with all the hands out with a big show Thor. You know, he comes down from the sky and he comes down with a big hammer dome and then everybody. Then his game will be ended. Everybody would have surrendered straight away. He's playing that Leela. You see, most of the time he comes as an idiot, as a fool, as a beggar, as a dog. You will never see. Okay. Now, when I say he comes down, I'm talking about the universal consciousness. Okay. That consciousness, which is not governed by Maya, which governs Maya. So it's capable of doing that. It's capable of doing this Leela. All right. So now we are in the situation where Arjuna is in the situation of war. So he is basically talking to his friend at this point. He hasn't really, he has put out all this argument and all that from a perspective of talking to his charioteer, but of course his charioteer basically he's like his good friend, his deepest well-wisher. So up to this point, he is only treating him from that viewpoint. Up to here, Arjuna has really come to he knows that Krishna it's not an ordinary fella, because you see Krishna's life, he's always making jokes, he is playing tricks, and he's behaving like an ordinary guy. He's totally nothing. So nobody respects everybody. Even Duryodhana also said that the one a few times that he displayed some miracle happen around him, Shakuni and Duryodhana just say that this because of he has learned some black magic. Only very few people knows that. Kunti knows it, and Bhishma knows it. Okay, so Bhishma always saw Lord Krishna as the Purushottama, the supreme being manifesting. So it's very, very difficult. Duryodhana never saw Krishna even until the end, until he died also. He never knew. Not he never knew. His ego wouldn't let him to accept that he was on the losing side, because you're playing against the divine will. Anyway, you will die. You know, no matter what you do, no matter how big army you bring also, if the divine will wants it to go in a certain pattern, it will make it. Okay? Any dissatisfaction, you have to submit the form to the divine. You cannot ask anybody else. Okay? So now the thing is, Arjuna is in this vishamam, is in the situation, in this conflict. And in the earlier verses, I did talk about Arjuna in chapter 1 was talking all about right and wrong, big lecture he was giving. We always do that. We always talk. Whenever we do something, you know, it's not about me. It's really about everything else. It may be about everything else, but only when we are tried, only when we are tested, only when crisis hit us, then only we will know whether it's about you or it's about something more than you. That is where Krishna is trying to point here. This is the situation Arjuna slipped. Although he always thought that he is serving a higher cause, he's serving his dharma. All that is right. But now he slipped from that. He slipped because now he made it personal. Okay? So in the last verse, verse 5, I went in Lent. I'll just give the gist that there what happened is not only verse 5, but in the earlier also verse, already made it personal. So no more chapter 1, all the talking about the right and wrong and the society and morality, all those gone. Now suddenly he's talking about himself, about his wealth, his fame. It's about what people will think about him. You remember that in verse 5, Guru Nahatwa hi mahanu bhavan. Shreyon Bhuktum Bhai Shajapi Haloke. So we have that. And then there was the word Arthakaman, right? Arthakaman. Okay. So that. Now, in any situation, when you start to see that situation from your ego's perspective, then what happens is your attention goes away from what is right for the situation, but what is right for you. That's what you will start to decide. Now, what is right for you is not the you, that the true you, the Atma. You're talking about the ego. And ego is very always petty. It's very, very petty, because ego is has only one purpose. Like we will study in Ahamkara, it has the purpose of protecting its own self-interest, its own existence, because it's fickle. It comes and goes. So it's always, and because it's so identified with limitations, it is always insecure. The Ahamkaras by nature is never at rest. It's always insecure. It's always feel suffocated. It always feel limited. It always feel lacking. It always feel it's not enough. It's not enough. No matter how much you do for this ego, at one point you can make the ego big, you can make the ego small, and that is where when you make ego big, you feel very confident. When it goes very small, you feel very fearful, your lack of confidence and all that. But to step out of that and to have the knowledge that I'm not this little ego, that I'm something that is free from all of this limitations that the ego is afraid of, that is a different kind of knowledge. That knowledge sets you free completely. It sets you free. And just go through this knowledge, go through this process, try to develop that understanding. I'll tell you, it really will set you free. It's a liberating knowledge, because even myself, you no matter what happens in my life, you will, I when I have come to that knowledge, I realize this is the only knowledge that sets me free. Okay, now, so we understand in the inner life happiness, I also discuss, and next week I will go back into the Ahamkara, that the Ahamkara is the one that is suffering. The ego is the one, the real sufferer, not the awareness behind the ego. Okay, if you remember that. So all the emotions of the mind is tied to the little ego. So it is the ego that is enjoying, and it is the ego that is suffering. The ego identifies itself as the enjoyer, and the ego itself identifies itself as a sufferer. Not the awareness which you are aware. You can always step out of it. The moment that kind of understanding dawns, how bad emotional state your mind is, you can step out of it. It's possible, completely possible. You just have to come to an deeper insight to see that, and then once you get you see that, then there is no return. It's always crystal clear to you already. So now here in verse 5, because he made it personal, he made that situation very personal. So then what happened is his entire orientation, his entire discussion of that situation become about him, no more about the situation itself. Okay, so there you have a shift. The attention goes towards the self-preservation of the ego. And we saw that he was having guilt. So these are all the nature of the ego's behavior, guilt. And he displayed false renunciation. If you remember in verse 5, he said, I want to give up. I want to throw everything and go away. I don't want to sit here. He said that, right? He need to live on alms in this world than to slay the most noble teacher. He said like that. But then after that, he said again, what about my enjoyment of, how will I enjoy wealth and fame when having blood in my hand? So one side he talk about he want to let go everything, and one side he talk about how can I enjoy without guilt. So he himself conflicted his own statement there. So that is an indication of the ego again. The ego is guilty. It's not that the whatever his reasoning is not true in his own. His justification has no value on its own. It has only value to him because of the ego. That's what we always do. We create all kinds of justification when we come in a very difficult situation. But the justification for us is a justification only has value to serve the ego. Once that ego is satisfied or gets what it wants, then suddenly that whatever justification you are giving goes away. Okay? It's just like sometimes, you know, in my life, I've taught so many people. You cannot even imagine how many people's life I have become part of their life. I have no idea. Maybe I was destined to be like a busybody, to be in everybody's life, something like that. That's my destiny, I think, you know. So there are some people in my life experience when they were in really, you know, a bad situation. My presence was so important, They expressed to me that without me, they are going to die, you know. So, and the justification. But if you really listen to the justification, you would probably believe that, oh, they really care about you, you know. They really respect you or care about you and all that. But suddenly when you have fulfilled whatever or solved all the problems for them, suddenly all the justification disappear. You're not important anymore. You know, I don't need you in my life anymore. Please go away. So whatever that is being justified earlier, whatever that has been reasoned out, was only to serve the self-interest. Once the self-interest, once the ego feels safe, or now the justification has no value. Oh, whatever I say has no value. So you will see this, you will encounter this in your life also. A lot of people will would have also experienced in that way. But most of the time, we have to observe whether we ourselves are doing it, right? So Arjuna, his ego was showing the sign of guilt, was showing the sign of rejection, and a fear of judgment, right? Fear of other people's judgment, okay? Now, he goes into verse 6, and here he says, nor do we know which is better for us, that we should conquer them or they should conquer us. The very sons of Dhritarashtra whom, having slain, we do not wish to live, stand facing us. So now completely he has come to accept that he is confused. So slowly he is coming down already. After Krishna gave his answer, his ego came out. His ego now started to scream and all that. His self-interest came out. But now suddenly he started to realize all his justification is failing. He's actually confused. So he's now saying, I don't know. Is it better for us to kill them or better for them to kill us? I'm very confused. So this is a state of confusion. I will explain this in a moment. And then he says that we have no heart to kill them, yet they're standing in front of us wanting us to kill them. So like that, that's the second part of it. He's saying in that way. So it's an indication of his complete confusion, but he's recognizing it. That leads to verse number 7, which we'll do next week, which is the most famous opening verse, which indicates that this person is ready for the teacher, is ready to learn. So before that, we want to stick with this verse number 6. So I told you, so here we have this one. Okay, so basically what happens is, I want to explain one more thing. Now the ego, when the ego comes into the picture, when I say ego, I'm talking about our personal interest. So we do that all the time, okay? It's not only other people, right? We always do that all the time. So basically when any situation comes in, we make it personal. What happens when you make it personal? Your ego, which is the holder of all the processes in your mind, correct? So it holder. Therefore, all the emotion that is invoked by the ego, so the emotion that, so suppose you feel insecure, you feel worried, you feel afraid, you feel depressed, you feel upset, you feel panic, all these are various emotions. But the emotions cannot exist on its own without an agent holding it, without an agent identifying with it. That agent that identify, oh, I am afraid, oh, I am angry, oh, I am panicking. That agent is called the ego. So that's the job of the ego. The moment the agent let go of that identification with the emotion, what happens is the emotion will have no momentum and it will gradually fade away. Okay, this is important. Now what happens is, now you have the ahankara, now you have the emotion, and you are in the situation like Arjuna. But to justify that emotion, your ego does what? Employs the help of the intellect to create justification. However, the intellect now, under the master, under the orders of the ego, is creating reasoning. But the reasoning is not independent. You are reasoning only to justify the emotion. Okay? Now, most life problems are like that. Why we are not able to come out from a problem, from an argument and all that, is because the situation there is, we have completely take our attention away from that. The whole attention is now about this ego. Now the ego thinks is the problem is not so much of the situation, but the emotion that it is experiencing, because this is the experiencer, sufferer. And to fortify that fact that it is suffering this emotion, it reasons. It employs the intellect to fortify, to strengthen, to justify those emotions. So how do you come out from that when you yourself actually is giving all the strength to hold on? I am panicking, and then your mind goes into the mode, why I'm panicking? Very, very clearly. So even if somebody come and tell you, don't panic. No, there is a solid reason to panic. So there is an objective, logical reason to panic. So therefore I must panic.
Okay? Sorry, can I, sorry to interrupt. You mentioned that we are using intellect to reason the emotion. But if I were to think that the emotion is actually caused by the intellect. So let's say I'm in a situation where I'm supposed to be panic. The intellect is telling me to be panic, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I hope I'm explaining it.
Situation. You see, there is biological... I think I can answer you. See, for example, there is the memory. Okay? So in the memory, I'll mute first because... So the memory is there. Now, by thousands of years of evolution and also because of our own life learning, I told you all that memory is also an automation kind of a process. So suddenly... somebody come and tap you in the back, you jerk. Now that is different from saying, that is now you are showing fear, your hair all stand up and all that. But that is an automation process in which your body and mind is getting ready to fight or flight. To see what is it? Is it a friend? Oh, then friend, oh, you calm down. If it's an enemy or it's a gorilla touching you behind, you run, right? But if you don't have that fear reaction, okay, that spontaneous reaction, that comes, then you will not be able to respond to the situation very quickly. Now, that is the function of memory, not the function. So when you panic, that's not the function of intellect. Intellect is called buddhi. Intellect only can function from an analytical point of view. It needs to make a difference between right and wrong, real, unreal. That digestion, that discrimination, in fact, the very quality of the intellect, it discriminates. This is hot, this is cold. That is the quality. But in those kind of spontaneous automation, you don't do that. You react directly. although we tend to say, yeah, it's an emotion, but that's, those are reactions, not so much of, not emotions. Now, the emotion that we are talking about is more not from the memory mechanism, but more from the ego mechanism, where the ego, and also from the manas. So now later you will see here, Arjuna displayed the quality of manas. Remember, manas in inner life happiness, manas is sankalpa vikalpa. Should I kill them or should they kill me? Which is better? You see, he made that statement. That is sankalpa vikalpa. He has one thought and then he has another thought which is countering it. He is now there. Now, manas is the most basic mind, the conscious mind. But the manas, again, the manas cannot, anything also cannot function automatically. Everything has to be tied down to the ego. So here it is the spontaneous processes, those are coming from memory, those are different. And even those memory reaction are also offered to the ego, whether the ego wants to take or not. When you get shocked, you turn and you observe, and then you make a decision whether you want to run or it's okay. But those are automated process by the memory. However, here are situations where the ego is going through and the ego is feeling very uncomfortable. And therefore, the ego will try to draw all the mechanism of the mind to support it. It will also draw memory to support it. Past experiences will come out from the memory. It draws the intellect to analyze the situation from its viewpoint. So some people's ego, so is that there also the ego also can be different kinds of ego that will, I will in a later Gita we will talk about that, the sattvic nature of it, the tamasic nature of it. The corrupted ego has a very perverted way of doing things. So they use all the mechanism of the mind to support it. This is the situation we are looking at. Because now Arjuna is in a particular situation. That observation of the situation causes his ego to react to that. And his ego starts to create a lot of justification. The problem is because he is coming from that ego point of view, his own internal wisdom of what is right, what needs to be done, is in conflict with his own justification. And therefore, he is not able to be confirmed on his point of view. So he goes into the manas, and the manas is showing it to him that should we kill him or should we allow him to kill us? So the manas is going into the tug of war, into the pros and cons. Okay, of course, if the person has very ignorant, unlike an Arjuna, is not a noble person, an ignoble guy who has no wisdom, who doesn't care about dharma, who doesn't care about right and wrong, he wouldn't be in Arjuna's situation. He will probably do all the wicked thing with no, that's why we say without conscience. But Arjuna is not such a person. Okay, so we have already said Arjuna is one of the best of personalities. He is a very good person, very honorable man actually. Okay, so inside him he is conflicted. He knows, he has his memory of knowledge of his duties of Kshatriya and all that. He is aware that for he has to go through all this justification to counter those that he has been taught, because now he has turned his attention to the ego. He got caught by the ego, the fear of the ego, the guilt of the ego, the shame of the ego, the fear of losing the people, losing his loved one, the fear of the judgment by other people. Okay? And you can ask me because, unmute again, any questions? Because I may not be clear to you because you can, you have any questions? Maybe you can clarify your situation. Did I clarify or you're still not clear?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
So now I'm going step by step to look at the processes here. Now what happens is, when we should not read this Gita about somebody else's story. So we all that's why I always talk about us, we are doing this. So it's not about Arjuna. So we have to understand that it's the same process we are also going through. And now in that situation, our attention turn away from trying to use the intellect to do what is the best to be done in that situation. So we intellect to analyze for a solution, to analyze the context of the situation, to analyze what is reality, what is unreality, what is the truth and what is untruth, what is real and what is unreal, what is relevant and what is irrelevant of the situation. But once the ego, once we are completely identified with the ego's demands, then we use the same intellect, we order the same intellect, not to analyze that situation, but to analyze, to justify our situation, our feeling, our ego. So it becomes about my feeling of guilt, my feeling of unhappiness, my feeling of upset. That is the justification. And this is the biggest trap. This is what we called as an intellectual arrogance. Okay, what happens is, this is one more step I'm taking. Not always it goes to, Arjuna did reach this level. Okay, so in some commentaries they have mentioned this. This is the reason why he was blah, 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 blah in the whole chapter so much. And Krishna was just silent, did not answer him. Okay, you will see. So this is a person talking from the ego point of view. And why I call that an intellectual arrogance is because now you have the sufferer, the ego, panicking or upset or angry or depressed, whatever it is. It is trying to resolve the emotions it's having. But rather than resolve the emotions, it employs the intellect, its own intellect, to justify and create more stronger walls to hold on to its own noise, its own chatter. You get what I'm saying? Because of that, the intellect, and depending on how smart the person is, he is going to create more and more reasoning, more and more. It's not just reasoning. We create blame. Blame is also the function of the intellect, because we analyze and say, you did it, you. You know, you have to, before you point the finger to someone, you have to make a choice also, right? So shame, demand. So feeling, even when you feel like you are victimized, all this feeling comes from the intellect. And the more the intellect pour in the oil, the more the fire of the ego grow in, the more the pain grow in, you know. The more you think about it, the more you rotate, the more your anger goes in, or the more your fear goes in, goes deep. And you are ready to betray. You're ready to cheat. You're ready to anything. At this point, even the wrongdoing becomes right to you, because your ego now is completely controlling the intellect, and the intellect justifies everything. That's how Hitlers are created, right? That's how wicked people are created. They are very smart, very intelligent people. But their intellect is now under the command of the ego. So in that point, even the most wicked, the most evil thing also, the most cruel thing also is justified. Because now I'm hurt, therefore I'm going to kill you. So, because my hurt for me is so big, to me it's so important, right? So here, in a typical situation, it is expressed by the sentiment that I know. Okay. I know better. That situation is, most of the time, it is the final lock in your hands. It stops you from learning. When you make that statement, I know better, it stops you from learning. So in fact, many people don't progress, especially even in the spiritual. So a lot of people get into trap. Even spiritual knowledge also, it can cause you this kind of ego. You know, ego, arrogance. Ego is always there. We all have ego, but you become ego. So I know everything. My Guruji taught me everything. So when that feeling comes, Especially young people, they're very smart, but I really, sometimes when I look into their eyes, I can see through so many layers of it. And sometimes I feel very sad. I feel only time, only life will have to teach, be a teacher to you. Because that's going to lead you all to misery, misery. Nothing. There's no achievement other than just sadness and a life of battle and conflicts. The fact now, Arjuna is saying, Nachai tat vid maha katarano gariyo gariyaha yadva jayema yadiva no jayeyuhu. This is the fact that earlier when he had gone into an intellectual arrogance, his intellectual arrogance have stopped him from analyzing the situation. Now he has come to see that we don't know to conquer them or to be conquered by them. I don't know which is better of the two. That is the chain of the ego controlling the intellect has been broken. And how it's broken? I don't know that statement. He has come down and he made that statement. The very fact healing starts when you start to realize, I don't know. I need to find the answer. Any situation when you, the moment you get into the you notice the mechanism of manas, right? Should I kill? Should I not kill? Of course, you won't have that kind of situation. But when you are going in that situation, but yet when your thoughts are going sankalpa vikalpa sankalpa vikalpa, it will generate emotion. It will generate fire. It will generate all kinds of sentiments. But if you go into that, dragging your intellect and say, intellect, help me to sustain this particular state. I am so miserable. Justify my misery. It will build on the walls. And inside the walls, it will be like an oven. The fire will keep on burning. But the moment you start to recognize that if I'm miserable, if I'm unhappy, the sign that as I'm unhappy means I do not know it rightly. If you know something clearly, rightly, you won't be enslaved to that emotion. You won't be affected by that situation. You'll be free. But the very step to come out of that is a recognition of, I don't know. And when Arjuna said this for the first time, in fact, we don't know we should conquer them or they should conquer us. That's why subsequently, Karpanya Dosho, that big, great verse comes in number 7. Then only the divine is willing to open and shower the grace to him. Because next week we will see why the divine doesn't pour in the knowledge, doesn't come in with the help and support. Because you are still building walls against the divine. Okay, even though you may be going to temple and crying there, and you may say, God help me and all that, but you have closed the door by the walls created by the ego using the help of your own just intellect. So when you recognize the indecisiveness of your state of mind, that's the very first state you become free from. You free your intellect from just merely obeying the ego. Then your intellect will be open to receive new knowledge. You understand what I'm saying? So when somebody says, so I don't know, then your intellect is now free. Then the intellect will listen. Now the intellect wants to learn. So the opening up of it we'll see in subsequent sloka, but in this sloka itself, we understand that Arjuna has now taken one step down. Yes, he is very confused, but here is the first time you are seeing he himself recognizes that he is so confused. The fact that you recognize your pain, you recognize your confusion, you recognize that you don't have knowledge, you don't have the right understanding. That is the first step to healing. That is the first step to learning. And that is the first step even in spiritual progress. That's why people will come and learn. Most of the time I've been screaming around, you people don't come, because when they hear self-improvement, I don't have to improve myself. Yeah, I just need to learn something that will give me extra powers, you know, or do something outside for my body, for my health, I'm okay, you know. But the body behaves shittily, except me. So so I like to, I like a lot of, I just like Facebook memes and Instagram posts, you know, which talk about everybody else except for me. But the funny thing is everybody is also looking at the same thing in the same way. So that's why it doesn't, it's not easy in this very, if you are even very fact, you are sitting down here listening to this class, is the reason is because you have done some punya in your past birth. Really, I'm seriously telling you. Oh, there is three blessings in a life that you can get. The first blessing is to be born as a human. It's not easy to be born as a human being. And Shankaracharya, Adi Shankara himself said this. So to be born as a human being. You know, and then the second blessing is to have a desire to want to learn about yourself. The second blessing. If you have that desire born in you, third blessing is to have a teacher to come and teach you the knowledge of the self. If you have these three blessings, you're the most blessed person in this world, this universe. From the layman, they may not think this is a great blessing. But if you are able to die and born again, die and born again, die and born again, and put everything in perspective, you realize there's only three things I need. May I be born with the awareness, and may I have a person to guide me. So if you have that, not only you all sitting down, even including myself, right? It's only including myself. Even the, I'm always being guided. So that's why I go to so many teachers. You must be, every teacher will take you to a certain level, guide you to a certain level. When you continue and again and again, and teachers will come, you know, next birth. And if you come back, you will have other, many other teachers again. But these are all blessings. It's very difficult to appreciate it because we can't see in a materialistic point of view. We can't see in a tangible things. So it's not easy to make people understand what is the value of these classes. These things that I tell you will never fade. You may not remember the sloka, but you will, something would, there's some knowledge would have gone in. Some kind of things would have be there. And as you go in life, it will revisit you. It will knock you and say, hey, get out. You are being caught by the ego. You know, then you will remember, you know, I need to learn. I need to get guidance. I need to see how to come out of this situation. You will come in that frame of mind. But others, they won't. They are still stuck. So I'll give you all one example. These Gita classes normally is now 8 o'clock, right? So normally I will take my, I don't know about all of you, but normally I take my dinner before the class. So this happened a few classes back. So one time, so sometimes we will prepare. I will prepare the food. Sometimes my wife will buy. You know, she will bring back. So it's really fluid here. There's no real plan of for food and dinner. It's always, don't know what is going to happen next. It's just whatever happens. So in one of the classes, just exactly on Friday, Gita classes. So my wife, she messaged me much earlier, said they already bought food for dinner. So a lot of dinner. Okay. Then what happened is, normally she will reach here about 7 something. So you all know, but 8 o'clock class is there. So 7 something. So just before class, I will have my dinner. Sometimes 15 minutes before class, 10 minutes before class, I will have my dinner. But now that day, she came late because of jam or whatever and arrived 7:30. So 7:30 and by the time she came up, and then only, okay, realized there was no food. She left in the office. So she came into the room and told me, I left so much of food I bought. Today, especially, we bought all the one whole bundle. And I left it in the office. And you know, Norm, a lot of time I don't take food because I'm so busy in working. I won't even have a proper, I will drink a cup of coffee by my breakfast, maybe eat a banana or something. And then I will just, the whole day I will go empty stomach. So sometimes I only have one meal a day. So in that particular time, I didn't have food also. I didn't have proper food. I didn't have a lunch. I probably maybe ate one banana, apple, something I ate. And then I drank coffee. So coffee makes you to survive. But you know something, I know if this would have happened 8-10 years ago, it would have been very different context. At that moment, my first answer is, have you called someone in your office? Ask them to take the food, take it home, share among themselves. So she told me, no, already call already, inform already, ask the colleague to take the food and share among them. I say, okay, finish. And then that's it. Then so decide what? Because now to cook and all that won't take time and there was nothing in the house. So I decided, never mind, I'll just drink water. So that day when I was teaching the Gita class, I was very drowsy. I was very, very drowsy. And I was exhausted already because I didn't eat. But when I start teaching, I start realizing a lot of the energy. You need a lot of energy when you teach. If you really start doing like what I do, you start teaching classes, you realize how much energy actually you need to when you run a class. But you know, after that, after the class finished, we ordered food. We ordered food downstairs. I didn't even order. Why I didn't even order? Because there was like 20 minutes only left. 20 minutes. Even if I order the food, by the time it will come, it will take another half an hour. The class 8 o'clock started. So the only thing I could do in my mind that what can I do in that moment? The only thing I can do is eat some biscuits and drink another cup of coffee. The problem is I already drank coffee. If I drink too much of, I don't want to drink too much of coffee. So I say, okay, coffee is out. Biscuits, I didn't feel like eating biscuits because I don't have a sugar rush. So I said, they say, never mind, I just drink water. But the thing is, after that, a few days later, the thought came to me, I realized one thing, that the whole situation between me and my wife and the whole situation was, there was a biological reaction to it, my hunger and my exhaustion, but there was no emotional reaction to it. That suddenly a thought came to me, I thought, hey, I forgot to get angry. So I start to think to myself, hey, I forgot to get angry, you know. Yala, I should have got angry. But then I thought and see, you know why? This is something I want you all to realize, you know, it is not something that you can do. It's not consciously you're not doing it, you know. Your frame of mind is changed. The situation, I realized, oh, this is what I was, and that time I was talking about Arjuna and the situation, and I thought to myself, oh, this is the thing I was telling about Arjuna. When you don't bring the person in the situation, if I would have bring the person, I would say, you stupid, you know why you never do this? You know how important food and the whole day I never eat. Huh? You know I'm going to sit for class, what even, nothing, you know, you should have called me and told me earlier, all these things would have come out, my anger would have come out, right? And I would have justified myself. I mean, I would have justified my anger. And certainly there would have been reason. I mean, why you never check before you leave the office, all these things would have come out. Correct? But that only can happen if my attention goes away from what is happening, where what is happening is the food is not there. That's what is happening. But because I don't bring the ego in the picture, then the ego's emotion and then to draw in all the justification, all that was forgotten. You may do this a few times, but if this knowledge increases in you, gradually, even when you bring the ego, you will put a brake and pull back. You will put a brake and pull back. You will start to realize, okay, what I'm doing now is not even necessary for the situation. You'll pull back. You understand what I'm saying? So as you grow in this understanding, and as you deepen your awareness of this, your intellect, which we will talk in the Inner Life Happiness class, the Buddhi's function, your intellect has the capacity to learn. And what it will do is, it will learn for next time when the ego reacts and demands the justification of the intellect will counter back. The intellect will say, no, this is not required. This will only put you in much more misery. It will not help you in this situation. Up to the point, until so much, the ego starts to dissipate. It starts to dissipate. And so much so, a lot of situation will come and pass through your life. The ego doesn't even bother to appear. You know? So it rains, it rains. It's sunshine, it's sunshine. You know, I miss the bus, I miss the bus. You know, I still say it happily. Not because I miss the bus, but there's no reason for me to be upset. You know, and I do feel upset. It is momentarily. So like I said in my comment, this is the point I want everyone to come, where your natural state is happy. You just simply need a reason to be unhappy. Now you need a reason to be happy. And your natural state is, it's not supposed unhappy, but you're actually feeling like you're unhappy. But it should be the other way. So you feel unhappy for a while. After that, you come back. So this is the sloka. We have seen this from the verse number 1 all the way to verse number 6. And verse number 7 is a very beautiful, very powerful verse, which we'll do next week. And this whole teachings that I have told you all in the beginning, in how to look at the situation and how to, you know, how the ego comes into it and how your intellect, everything has brought into this. And when you learn, come to class for the Inner Life Happiness, a lot of things that you learn there, you will also relate back to all these things. And finally, Arjuna here has come to the point of recognizing that he don't know, recognizing that he is in a state of confusion. Okay. Because once we don't know only, we will say, help me. If you don't come to that state, you won't say, help me. You will say, show me a way, guide me. You know, your ego will say, no, I don't need your help. But once you recognize that you don't know, I don't know, then the ego comes down. And that is expressed as humility. Okay? Any questions? We have to thank Arjuna for setting the stage for us. So in the verse number 7 is basically the opening of the Gita. Number 8, 7 and 8, and then thereon, after that, Krishna start to speak in verse number 11. And then after that, the whole big Gita will shift towards Lord Krishna's teaching. Okay, so all his teachings comes out here. So end the class here today. It's 9 o'clock already. We'll chant Shanti Mantra. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Okay, thank you. See you all.